Save big money at Menards. We're your destination for concrete landscaping blocks. We have the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Get free estimates fast using our easy do-it-yourself landscape design program in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on landscape products at Menards, America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. Visit JDPower.com for details and Menards.com for deals.
Welcome, everyone, to part two of today's Couch Potato Diary. My name is Peter Klein. Thank you very much for tuning in on a Fightin' Friday. It is a bit more jam-packed than our normal Fightin' Fridays because the schedule this week kind of got thrown into flux. But today we are going to give you a complete breakdown of Fury versus Usyk. We're going to look at the legacy of Tyson Fury, complicated as it is. We're going to look at that. That was promised earlier this week, so we're just going to do that today. Look at some of the other big fights coming up in boxing in the next little while. Then a full breakdown of Fury Usyk, and we'll close things out with some UFC talk. So a lot of face punching on the show today. Let's kick things off looking at one half of this weekend's massive heavyweight championship bout, Tyson Fury, in today's Legacy Look. Tyson Fury was born in Manchester on August 12, 1988, the son of Irish traveler parents John Fury and Amber. He was born 3 months premature, weighing just 1 pound. His father named him after Mike Tyson, who was the reigning undisputed heavyweight champion of the world, and he would later explain that the doctors told me there was not much chance of him living. I had lost two daughters in the same way who had been born prematurely. He decided to name Tyson as Fury was a fighter and survived premature birth. His mother, Amber, had 14 pregnancies in total. Only four of the children survived, and a daughter, Ramona, was born in December of 1997, but died within days. This experience stayed with Fury, who was just 9 years old at the time. Fury would begin boxing at the age of 10. His father, John, trained him until 2011 when he was jailed for gouging out the eye of another traveler due to a long-standing feud. At least it wasn't spur of the moment. Fury's uncle, Huey, trained him until he died in 2014, after which Fury's other uncle, Peter, would train him in preparation for his fight against Klitschko. We'll get to that one in a while. Peter Fury was also a former boxer and was previously jailed for 10 years in 1995. He established an amphetamine trafficking network in Northwest England and continued to oversee the criminal enterprise while behind bars. Fury himself has had no trouble with the law. So, we are establishing that this isn't exactly white picket fence growing up, right? Like, there is a lot going on in this young man's life as he is leading up to boxing. And boxing in his blood, his family with a long history. His father competed in the 80s as Gypsy John Fury, initially as a bare-knuckle boxer, also taking part in some unlicensed bouts, and then eventually went to the pesky licensed way. John had a professional record of 8-4-1 and would lose to a couple former or future heavyweight champions. Fury himself, now Tyson, made his debut professionally at the age of 20 on December 6th in 2008 in Nottingham on the undercard of Carl Froch against Jean Pascal. Fury would win by first round knockout. He then had six more fights in the span of 7 months as kind of the typical boxing prospect sort of a beginning. Hey, we know you're better than all of these guys, so let's just storm through them and see if we can get that record looking good for the posters. Fury's big break came in a rematch with Derek Chisora, rescheduled. They initially had it scheduled for earlier that summer. It would be rescheduled for November 29th, 2014 at the XL Center in London. The bout was also a WBO title eliminator. Fury won after dominating the fight. Chisora's corner pulled him out at the end of the 10th round. Fury also used a southpaw stance for the majority of this fight, despite the traditional right-handed orthodox stance he had been using previously. And I bring that up because coming up this weekend, he is fighting Oleksandr Usyk, and we have seen in some of the trading and the media workouts leading up to this that he has kind of switched into that southpaw stance and has been kind of working on things that way. So this maybe isn't just a throw him off the scent thing. This is a style that Tyson Fury can use. He would use his jab to give Chisora all sorts of trouble staying on the outside, using his longer reach to dominate the fight. Chisora really didn't land much of note in this bout, and Fury's awkward style ends up kind of winning the day. Fury would call out heavyweight champion Vladimir Klitschko, but he needed one more fight. So he stopped Christian Hammer in the 8th round after, once again, the corner called a stop to things. This would set up the fight for Fury that would define what we thought the jumpstart of his career. Maybe, maybe not. In July 2015, it was confirmed that Fury would fight Vladimir Klitschko in a world heavyweight title showdown for the WBA, IBF, WBO, IBO, Lineal, and Ring Magazine heavyweight titles. Initially scheduled for October 2015, the fight was postponed about a month after Klitschko sustained a calf injury. For this fight, Fury would train with some high-ranking kickboxers, including Rico Verhoeven. And that is another part of the Tyson Fury story, is that he has been looking for all different ways to grow as a fighter and kind of take advantage of some uncharacteristic, I guess, and unique styles to kind of give him an edge. The fight would take place at the, apologies for the pronunciation, Espirit Arena in Dusseldorf, Germany. On fight night, there was controversy with the gloves. There was a complaint about the ring canvas. Klitschko reportedly had his hands wrapped without the presence of a Fury representative, so they had him do it again. Eventually, Fury wins a 12-round unanimous decision with scores of 115-112, 115-112, and 116-111. It was not the most riveting of bouts. The gaudy war, this was not, right? But what made it so interesting was Klitschko had dominated everyone, basically. And you would assume he would do it again. That this Tyson Fury, whose biggest win is 2 against Derek Chisora, Klitschko's going to dominate this one like he has most of his opponents, and everything's going to be fine. And as the fight's going on, you're starting to realize, like, man, Klitschko's not turning it on. He's not. I think he's losing. I think he's lost. Like, it kind of built in that way. And so the drama was more what was at stake and what wasn't happening, rather than what was happening at that particular time. Cat wants to say hi. In the post-fight, Fury was very emotional, saying this was a dream come true. Quote, "We worked so hard for this. I've done it. It's hard to come to foreign countries and get decisions. It just means so much for me to come here and get the decision." He took the microphone and thanked Klitschko. "I'd like to say to Vladimir, you're a great champion, and thanks very much for having me. It was all fun and games during the build-up." Klitschko failed to throw his well-known right, mostly due to Fury's constant movement. He said, "Tyson was the faster and better man tonight. I felt quite comfortable in the first 6 rounds, but I was astonished that Tyson was so fast in the second half as well. I couldn't throw my right hand because the advantage was the longer distance that he had." Following months of negotiations, the rematch with Klitschko was announced on April 8th, 2016. This time, the fight scheduled to take place in Fury's hometown of Manchester, the Manchester Arena, for July of 2016. And so this is, like, all of a sudden, Tyson Fury now kind of, maybe he's the A side of this particular exchange. And so that gives you a bit of a, say hi everyone, Shiloh. That gives you a bit of a sense of, like, how things have kind of grown for this guy as he's starting to take over. Despite agreeing to the terms of the rematch, Fury said he had, quote, "no motivation and had gained an extreme amount of weight after the first fight as he weighed over 24 stone. For those of us here, North America, that is 330 pounds or 150 kilos. That's by April of 2016. On June 24th, 2016, it was announced that the fight would be postponed due to Tyson Fury spraining his ankle in training. On the same day, maybe it wasn't an ankle sprain, because on the same day, Fury and his cousin Huey were charged by UK anti-doping, quote, "with the presence of a prohibited substance, namely nandrolone, from a sample taken 16 months previously, in February of 2015. Tyson and Huey said that they strenuously deny the charge. On September 23rd, Fury again postponed the fight after being declared, quote, "medically unfit." ESPN reported that Fury had failed a drug test for cocaine a day before the second postponement. Fury cited problems with depression after the positive cocaine test. Fury's mental health deteriorated after winning the titles. And so this is kind of the price of fame. And it's something we've talked about on this particular program surrounding mental health in the past, that there is no hurdle that you can clear that's like, okay, I know I've had these mental issues, but this, but that, but this. If you got him, you got him, man, and you got to deal with him. And Fury found this out in a very, very hard manner. On October 4th, 2016, in an interview with Rolling Stone, Fury said, quote, "I'm going through a lot of personal demons, trying to shake them off. This has nothing to do with my fighting. What I'm going through right now is my personal life. I've not been in a gym for months. I've been going through depression. I just don't want to live anymore, if you know what I'm saying. I've had total enough of it. Never mind cocaine. I just don't care. I don't want to live anymore." So cocaine is a little minor thing compared to not wanting to live anymore. "I'm seeing help, but they can't do nothing for me. What I've got is incurable. I don't want to live. All the money in the world, fame and glory means nothing if you're not happy. I'm seeing psychiatrists. They say I've got a version of bipolar. I'm a manic depressive. I don't even want to wake up. I hope I die every day. And that's a bad thing to say when I've got three children and a lovely wife, isn't it? But I don't want to live anymore. And if I could take my own life and I wasn't a Christian, I'd take it in a second. I just hope someone kills me before I kill myself." Quoting. I'll have to spend eternity in hell. I've been out drinking Monday to Friday to Sunday and taking cocaine. I can't deal with it, and the only thing that helps me is when I get drunk out of my mind." So, obviously, like, very open about a whole lot of things in this. And this is 2016, so it's only 8 years ago, but mental health concerns and mental health awareness have grown leaps and bounds since then. And this is the heavyweight champion of the world at a time. The heavyweight champion of the world is the most famous athlete and kind of the personification of what a strong man is supposed to be. They would never admit to mental health issues or things being overwhelming. And so you think for Fury, you have a lot going on in your childhood. But it's like, if I can just get to this, if I can just get to this, if I can just become the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world, maybe this will all go away. And when it doesn't, that has to hit you like a brick. And apparently it did with Tyson Fury, and it sent him into a bit of a spiral. 8 days after the interview is posted, pending investigation on an anti-doping case about his cocaine use, nandrolone findings, and being deemed medically unfit to fight, Fury decided to vacate all of his heavyweight championships. He said, quote, "I won the titles in the ring, and I believe they should be lost in the ring, but I'm unable to defend at this time, and I've taken the hard and emotional decision to now officially vacate the treasured heavyweight titles and wish the next in-line contenders all the very best as I now enter another big challenge in my life, which I know, like against Klitschko, I will conquer." In December, Fury's uncle Peter announced that Fury would be returning around spring in 2017 and would aim for a fight against WBC champion Deontay Wilder. On December 23rd, Fury tweeted that he was back in training ahead of a ring return around May or April in 2017. His tweet read, "I've had a nightmare 2016, done a lot of stuff I'm not proud of, but my promise to you is I'll return in 2017. On March 6, 2017, he tweeted that his return fight would take place on May 13th. Hours after that was announced, the British Boxing Board of Control, or the BBBOC, publicly announced that Fury was still suspended and that he would not be fighting in May. This was confirmed by General Secretary Robert Smith. He also mentioned that there had been no contact from Fury or his representatives since the ban started in October 2016. Promoter Frank Warren said that along with the dispute with the BBBOC, there would need to be a court hearing with UK anti-doping. On December 12th, UCAD, UK anti-doping, announced they had agreed with the Furies and the BBBOC to resolve the charges. Quote, "Taking into account the dealings in results management that meant charges were not brought in respect to the nandrolone findings until June 2016, and the provisional suspensions that Tyson and Huey Fury have already effectively served, the 2-year period of ineligibility is backdated to December 13th, 2015, and therefore expires at midnight on December 12th, 2017. End quote. Tyson Fury's win over Christian Hammer was disqualified, but his win over Klitschko was not for reasons. Tyson blamed the elevated nandrolone levels on eating uncastrated wild boar, which, sure, he declared his innocence. So, January of 2018, Fury announced that he was reapplying for his boxing license and he would be fighting. He takes on 39-year-old Albanian Sefer Safiri, who was a career cruiserweight, having fought once at heavyweight before. Fury tipped the scales at 276 pounds. 66 pounds heavier than his opponent, but 112 pounds lighter than where he had been during all of his mental health issues. This fight was not a long one. He ends up dominating Safiri, winning after round four. There was a brawl that broke out in the crowd. People were getting a little bit amped up. Order was eventually restored. So, in July of 2018, it was announced that Fury would fight former two-time world title challenger Francesco Pianetta on August 18th. Fury weighed in at 258 pounds, 18 pounds lighter than his last one. So he continues to lose weight as he is continuing to get a little bit healthier. And this time he goes the full 10 rounds, defeating Pianetta by decision. Steve Gray scored about 100 to 90 in favor of Fury. Fury would later say that he had no intention of trying to go out and win this fight early. He said, quote, "I think it was a calculated boxing performance. I got 10 rounds with a very tough man under my belt. I was working on my jab, slipping his punches. I thought that was a step up with the opponent and display. I needed the rounds, and I have plenty left in the tank." During the post-fight interviews, promoter Warren, who we talked about before, confirmed that Fury versus Wilder was on. They signed the contract and the fight would take place in December 2018. According to the California State Athletic Commission, Wilder would earn a guaranteed base purse of $4 million. Fury would take home a guaranteed purse of $3 million. Despite the original claim that the revenue would be split 50-50, it was later revealed that Wilder could take home $14 million and Fury could get around $10.5 million. Both boxers would see this increase based on pay-per-view revenue. In front of a crowd of 17,698 at the Staples Center, Wilder and Fury fought. We picked this one up round six. Fury switches to the southpaw stance, and he starts to have success backing Wilder against the ropes. At the same time, he stayed cautious because Wilder has just career-altering power. In round seven, after trading jabs, which saw Fury come out on top, Fury landed a counter-right, quickly tied Wilder up before he could throw anything back. In the eighth round, there was back and forth action with both trying to land. Wilder threw a ton of his rather famous power shots. For the most part, Fury was able to stay out of the way. That was until the ninth, when Wilder drops Fury with a short left hook, followed by an overhand right. Fury is able to survive the round as he gets up before the 10 count. By the 10th, Wilder's starting to look fatigued, and this comes to Fury's advantage. You talk about the Klitschko fight, where it's like, I was not expecting him to be there in those later rounds. Well, he was against Wilder, and he ends up really putting it on and starting to pull ahead. But then in the 12th, and this is one of the more famous notes of the last, like, 15 years in boxing, Wilder lands a perfect combination that would have knocked out a building. Fury goes down, and he is out. Everyone thinks this fight is over. And if you go back and watch, maybe the referee gives Fury a bit of a break, that the count is a little bit long. But still, Fury gets up. And this is Deontay Wilder, who, like I said, has career-altering, fight-changing power, and he landed it right on the button. And Fury gets up. Wilder was fatigued, wasn't able to land any more power shots. Fury actually landed a little bit as the round came to a close. It is so wild. And you think about how differently things go from this point on. Maybe nothing changes, right? Like, Fury's no longer undefeated. But aside from that, like, maybe nothing else changes. But still, if Fury is down for just a couple more seconds, boxing history could be changed for forever. Instead, it ends up a 12-round split decision draw, meaning Wilder retains the WBC title. You have one judge giving it 115-111 for Wilder, one going 114-112 for Fury, and English judge Phil Edwards scored it a 113-113 draw. The crowd furious at this. Most people thought Fury did enough to win this fight. Draw, okay. Wilder winning, I don't know. Although, again, he did blast the bejesus out of him in that 12th round. But eventually, like we said, it stays as a split decision draw. The fight sold approximately 325,000 pay-per-view buys on Showtime in the United States, grossing around $24 million, making it the most lucrative heavyweight fight in the country since 2003. Showtime's delayed broadcast a week later drew an average of 488,000 viewers and peaked at 590,000. After the fight with Wilder, Fury secured a 5-fight contract with ESPN and Top Rank worth around $100 million American. He made his return to the ring at the Grand Garden Arena, MGM, in Las Vegas, Nevada, against WBO Intercontinental Heavyweight Champion Tom Schwartz. I'm assuming not the guy from Vanderpump Rules. This was on June 15th. This was Fury's first fight in Vegas. Schwartz was ranked number 2 by the WBO, number 9 by the IBF at the time, and Fury beat the brakes off that boy. He ends up getting the finish in the second round to win the WBO Intercontinental title. During the fight, Fury purposely backed up against the ropes and let Schwartz unload, moving his head and moving his head and putting on just an absolute defensive clinic. In between fights, Fury would make an appearance in the WWE on an episode of SmackDown on Fox on October 4th in 2019. He would appear as a fan, and he stared down Big Braun Strowman during his match. Strowman later threw Dolph Ziggler at Fury. After the match, Tyson Fury jumped the barricade, but was stopped by security. A week later, it was confirmed that Fury and Strowman would have a match at WWE Crown Jewel in Saudi Arabia, which is where the fight with Usyk this weekend is taking place. At Crown Jewel, Fury defeated Strowman by way of countout. Reportedly, Fury earned $15 million for this participation. A little bit later, he would make an appearance on an episode of SmackDown at Manchester Arena, shaking hands with Strowman, suggesting they would form a tag team before both being challenged by the B team of Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel, who they left laying in the ring. Back in the fight world, it is Fury defeating Otto Wallin by unanimous decision in his next bout, and then November 27, 2019, ESPN announces that Fury would face Deontay Wilder next year in a rematch. Fury weighed in at 273 pounds, the third heaviest of his professional career, 17 pounds heavier than his weight for the first Wilder fight. He stated in the lead up to the fight that he wanted extra size and power to look for a knockout. And this is one where there's a little bit of controversy, and this is where the mystique of Deontay Wilder kind of wore off. The fight started with Fury taking the center of the ring, establishing that size, establishing that jab early on, of course looking for big shots while avoiding the power swings of Deontay Wilder. In the third round, Fury floors Wilder with a strong right hand. Wilder beats the count, survives the round, but was obviously a little bit woozy and was starting to bleed. Wilder would go to the canvas 2 more times, but they were ruled slips before eventually getting knocked down again in the fifth with a nice quick combination from Fury. Wilder would again beat the count, but didn't really show a whole lot in this one. And then eventually the fight was stopped midway through the seventh round after another flurry from Fury caused Wilder's corner to throw in the towel. Wilder would blame the giant, costume he was wearing for wearing down. It wasn't Tyson Fury and his ability beating him. It was the costume that ended up costing me. And so this is where I think there is a bit of reputational damage done to Deontay Wilder. He would activate the clause for a second rematch against Tyson Fury after this loss. The trilogy fight was tentatively scheduled for July 2020, but I don't know if you remember, but between February and July, something happened, and so it was postponed due to the COVID-19 pandemic. So, with that postponement, in June, Anthony Joshua's promoter Eddie Hearn announced that Fury and Joshua had agreed to a 2-fight deal. This generation, up until recently, has been defined by 3 heavyweights, for the most part. Joshua, Wilder, and Fury. And so with Fury and Wilder doing their thing, all right, it's time for Anthony Joshua to go into this. So they said they agreed to a 2-fight deal, provided that Fury would defeat Wilder, and Joshua defeated his mandatory challenger of Pulev. But Wilder's promoter, Bob Arum, wouldn't let the trilogy die. On October 12, 2020, Fury announced that he was foregoing a trilogy fight with Wilder after organizers failed to deliver a date for the event in 2020. The Athletic reported, quote, Fury had every intention of fighting Wilder in 2020 and made several concessions regarding rescheduled dates. However, he was unwilling to allow this situation drag out, delaying a series of fights with Joshua while also keeping him out of the ring for an extended period of time. So, in May of 2021, the proposed unification bout between Fury and Joshua was thrown into serious doubt when arbitration judge Daniel Weinstein ruled that Fury will have to honor a contractual clause which mandates a third fight with Wilder. So, on 5 days later, May 22nd, 2021, Fury announced during the broadcast of a fight on ESPN that he had signed a contract for the trilogy fight, which no one really wanted. More people wanted to see Fury versus Joshua, because most people thought Fury won the first, and he definitely won the second. So they wanted to see a different challenge, and they wanted to see Joshua get moved into this world. But instead, it was confirmed that this fight was taking place. Ahead of the pre-fight press conference, the venue was officially confirmed for T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. And then things got postponed again because a COVID-19 outbreak. But eventually, the fight does take place. And on the night, both men exchanged a total of 5 knockdowns as Fury won the bout by 11th round knockout. After the fight, Fury praised his opponent, calling Wilder a top fighter, but criticized him for being a sore loser and refusing to, quote, show any sportsmanship or respect. In the post-fight interview, Fury would say, quote, I'm a sportsman. I went over to him to show some love and respect, and he didn't show it back. I will pray for him so that God will soften his heart. Fury would also add that it was a, quote, great fight tonight, worthy of the best of trilogies. Fury asserted his view that he is the best boxer in the division, stating, quote, I'm now the greatest heavyweight of my era, without a doubt. And so, yeah, like, it was a high-action fight, and Fury wins, but you're left kind of wanting another bout with, or a bout, sorry, with Fury and Joshua. And Joshua wouldn't be able to kind of fulfill his end of things and would kind of keep losing at very inopportune times. So the two never really cross. Up next for Fury was a mandatory challenge against Dillian White at Wembley Stadium. The first press conference for the fight took place on March 1st at Wembley, with White absent. White's lawyers stated that his client would not be partaking in promoting the fight as, quote, we still do not have things resolved. Despite his opponent's non-attendance, Fury was in full showman mode, declaring, quote, even Tyson Fury versus own shadow sells. And you are really starting to see, like I said there, the showman that is Tyson Fury. The fight would eventually take place in front of 94,000 fans. So, yeah, the guy's a draw. With around 10 seconds left in the 6th round, Fury would land a jab followed by a right uppercut that Pez dispensers White and sends him to the canvas. Although White was able to beat the count and rise to his feet, the referee deemed it unsafe for him to continue to take brain damage, halting the fight after 2 minutes and 59 seconds of the 6th round, declaring Fury the winner by technical knockout. At the time, Fury was up on all 3 scorecards. In his post-fight interview, Fury claimed that the fight against White was the last of his professional career. Quote, I've been in the game 20 years. I'm 34 in a few months. I've said the third fight with Wilder would be my last, but I felt I owed the fans one last homecoming. This is definitely the end of the Gypsy King, and I went out with a bang. Tonight was amazing, but this is the end. Fury said he had no regrets, stating, quote, I've fulfilled everything I've ever wanted to fulfill. I will retire as only the 2nd heavyweight in history after Rocky Marciano to retire undefeated. I was unbeatable at this game. And so naturally, a month later, it was announced that Fury would return to the ring to take on Derek Chisora in a trilogy for the WBC title at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium in London. Right? Before that, on September 3rd, 2022, Fury was in the audience of WWE Clash at the Castle. During the main event between Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre, Fury prevented Austin Theory from interfering by knocking him out. After the match, Fury helped the defeated McIntyre up and then reassured him that he did well while leading the crowd in some songs. Back to the fight game, Fury would beat Chisora by 10th round TKO in front of 60,000 fans in another dominant performance. After the fight, Theory is still going to keep going as he calls out undefeated heavyweight champion Oleksandr Usyk, who was seated ringside at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, to join him between the ropes. Fury indicated his preference to face Usyk as his next opponent to determine the undisputed heavyweight champion. And so naturally, up next, Fury fought UFC heavyweight champion Francis Ngannou in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia in October 2023 in what was Ngannou's professional debut. WBC officials confirmed the fight would take place. It would be a 10-round bout. It would be official, not an exhibition or anything like that, but the titles would not be on the line. Fans were a little upset. They wanted Fury versus Usyk. They wanted to unify these heavyweight championships and get the two biggest fighters of this now time in the heavyweight division. They wanted to get them in the ring. Instead, you get Fury against a guy who's never boxed before. Fury was a 14-1 favorite, but he was knocked down in the third round. He would go on to win by split decision. One judge did have it 95-94 for Ngannou, while the other two had it 96-93 and 95-94 in favor of Fury. Fury did outland Ngannou in total punches and outlanded him in power punches as well. When asked in the ring about the fight, Fury said that Francis was a lot better of a boxer than he thought he would be. He's a very awkward man and he's a good puncher and I respect him a lot. I don't know how close the fight was, but I got the win and that's what it is. And so now that has set it up for Tyson Fury to take on Oleksandr Usyk this weekend in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. And when you look at the boxing aspect of it, this is an incredible journey to go through everything he has gone through and get to this point. He has the size of the heavyweight champion of the world, no question. He has the technique of fighter much smaller than him. Same thing goes for the gas tank. And so that makes the fight with Usyk all the more intriguing. But, and there is a but, it is difficult for some people to fully get behind Fury. After Fury became world champion in 2015, the British media began to scrutinize what he had said in the past. He received criticism for having said he would, quote, hang his sister if she was promiscuous, as well as made comments in an interview before the Klitschko fight in which he denounced abortion, as well as homosexuality, saying that the legislation of these behaviors would bring forth a biblical reckoning. Fury was nominated for the 2015 BBC Sports Personality of the Year, but around 140,000 people signed a petition claiming that his equation of homosexuality with pedophilia should disqualify him. When asked about the petition by a BBC journalist, Fury quoted religious phrases, including, quote, believe in the Lord Jesus Christ and you will be saved, along with John 3:16. Fury ultimately came fourth in the Sports Personality of the Year award and said at the ceremony, quote, I've said a lot of stuff in the past and none of it is with intentions to hurt anybody. I apologize to anyone that's been hurt. He was also criticized for comments on bestiality and transgender people in a May 2016 interview. The interview was later deleted and Fury apologized. Quote, I said some things which may hurt some people, which as a Christian man is not something I would ever want to do. Though it is not an excuse, sometimes the heightened media scrutiny has caused me to act out in public and then my words can get taken out of context. I mean no harm or disrespect to anyone and I know more is expected of me as an ambassador of British boxing and I promise in the future to hold myself to the highest possible standard. So, on one hand, inspirational story of man who comes from an incredibly difficult background and rises up to become the heavyweight champion of the world, battles incredible demons, and fights his way back to become, once again, the heavyweight champion. But again, it is difficult for people to get behind him because of his comments on so many things that hurt so many people. And so, unfortunately, as with a lot of fighters, and a lot of athletes in general, it is a complicated legacy that Tyson Fury is fighting to defend this weekend in Saudi Arabia against Oleksandr Usyk. The boxing part of it is clear. He is one of the best, if not the best, of this generation, and this weekend will go a long way to proving such claims. But the other stuff is really, really tough to look past when you are dealing with all-time status and things of that. So if you can get behind Tyson Fury, there's a lot there. If you want to hate this guy, kind of a lot there as well. A complicated legacy for Tyson Fury. All right, let's take a brief pause from the Fury Usyk talk to look at some of the other big fights happening in boxing over the next little while.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So, boxing isn't done with Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. Coming up on June 1st, it'll be Deontay Wilder against Zhilei Zhang, and also Dmitry Bivol in action. A couple really, really interesting fights. Bivol, obviously, a very intriguing fighter. Deontay Wilder, who just came up in the, when you're talking about Fury's legacy, he is, I think, trying to hold on to relevancy in the heavyweight division. I don't know why this fight's happening and not an Anthony Joshua fight. It's way too late, but it still feels like one of the last kind of incomplete pieces of this era of heavyweight boxing. So, but I mean, look, Zhang is a really difficult out, and if Deontay Wilder isn't on top of his game, it's going to be another disappointing night for Deontay Wilder. And then June 15th, it is Gervonta Davis taking on Frank Martin. Also, you have David Benavidez in action. So a couple of big fights coming up in the next month and a bit in the world of boxing, as Tank looks to again remind everyone why he deserves to be in the pound-for-pound conversation. And David Benavidez, this is a big fight for him as he looks to put some of the pressure on Canelo. Stop some of this talk about a Terrence Crawford fight. Crawford fighting later this summer. Stop the talk about that fight and get that attention back on you for a Canelo Alvarez mega fight coming up in September, or at least fourth quarter of 2015. But some really, really big fights coming up in the boxing world that I think have a lot of people really excited about the sport here. Not just this month, like all throughout the summer. So much going on in the world of boxing. All right, it is now time to preview the undisputed heavyweight championship bout between Tyson Fury and Alexander Usyk. It is for the undisputed heavyweight championship of the world as Tyson Fury, the lineal heavyweight champion and the WBC heavyweight champ, goes up against the WBA, IBF, WBO, IBO, and Ring Magazine heavyweight champion, Alexander Usyk. Fury is 35 years old, born in Manchester, England. He comes in with a nearly untarnished record of 34 wins, no losses, and one draw, 24 of the wins coming by knockout. His last bout, a split decision victory over Francis Ngannou back in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, in October of 2023. It was his first decision win since 2019. Again, he is the WBC heavyweight champion, the former unified heavyweight champion. He has won 7 in a row since his draw with Wilder back in Los Angeles in 2018, a pro since 2008. Going up against Usyk, born in Ukraine, 21 fights, 21 wins, 14 of which coming by knockout. The most recent against Daniel Dubois in Poland in August 26, 2023. His first KO win since 2018. Again, the IBF, WBA, WBO, IBO, and Ring Magazine heavyweight champion, former unified cruiserweight champion. He's been a pro since 2013, following an Olympic gold medal win in 2012. 12. I have said before, I am endlessly intrigued by this fight. Tyson Fury, we just talked about it in the Legacy Look. Tyson Fury has all the skill, talent, and stamina of someone much smaller than him. But he also has the size of, you know, one of the biggest heavyweights of all time, and the power to go along with that. For Usyk, he is, I think, clearly going to be the most technical, most evasive, quickest fighter that Fury has faced, and probably by a substantial margin. And that is what makes this so intriguing. It is that, like, I think Usyk can, not certainly, like, I don't think Tyson Fury can match speed and technique with Usyk. But like we just said, Usyk has one knockout win since 2018. Fury has one split, has one decision win since 2019. The rest, he's been knocking dudes out. And so for Usyk to win this fight, he has to be perfect for 12 rounds. The thing is, though, he's good enough that he can be that. And I keep going back and forth on this because Fury lands one big punch and it's curtains and it's over. But Usyk is so good at avoiding that. And like these advantages that Fury has had when it comes to the cardio late in rounds against Wilder, against Klitschko, against Chisora, against all these guys, he's not going to have that against Usyk. In fact, he probably is going to have the lesser of the two cardios in this. And so I keep going back and forth on it. I do think that he just took Francis Ngannou lightly, but I do also think that is a sign that he is slowing down a touch, because I do think that Tyson Fury taking a guy not seriously still ends with Tyson Fury knocking that dude out. And he just couldn't get it against Francis. And I think Usyk is on another level, and I think he goes on to win this fight. I'm going with the Ukrainian heavyweight champion to unify the belts, become the undisputed heavyweight champion, to follow in the footsteps of Evander Holyfield, going from cruiserweight to heavyweight and unifying all those bad boys. I think he gets it done, and I think he gets it done by decision, but it is going to be just an unbelievable fight this weekend. I cannot wait. For those of you more inclined on the UFC side, there's quite a bit going on. We've had a few announcements, so let's get into that with a bit of fight talk. The Ultimate Fighting Championship announcing the first batch of fights for UFC 304 over in England. And it is the, like, these feel like the mandatory challenger fights. And it kind of feels like these are the, let's get these out of the way so we can get to the fights we want to put on. In the main event, it is Leon Edwards taking, I'm saying main event, I'm assuming. Leon Edwards taking on Bilal Muhammad for the undisputed welterweight championship of the world in the Ultimate Fighting Championship. Edwards, like, he has really established himself as not just the guy who happened to get a lucky kickoff against Kamaru Usman. He has established his own reign. For Muhammad, this is several years in the making for him. He has been one of the top challengers at 170 pounds for a very long time and has been deserving of this opportunity for quite some time. And so there's been concern about his style, concern about how much of a draw he is, yada, yada, yada. He is clearly going in as the B-side in this fout, in this bout in Edwards' home country of England. But he is every bit deserving of this opportunity. We'll break it down when it's happening, but I think Muhammad does have a interesting style that can grind down Leon Edwards. The problem is, Edwards has fought guys who can do that and kind of do it better than Muhammad, and he has managed to escape that. So I do think, initially, I give Leon Edwards the edge. In the co-main event, the interim heavyweight title on the line, as Tom Aspinall battles Curtis Blaydes. Blaydes has been dancing around a title shot for a little bit. Anytime he would get close, he would lose that title eliminator. He has now broken through, at least for this. This, again, the interim title, which basically puts him fourth right now. Because you have Jones, Stipe, and then you have the interim champion in Tom Aspinall, and it's Curtis Blaydes here. If that crowd in London's booing, Curtis Blaydes is having a real good night because he needs to grind this fight down. I don't know if he's going to be able to do it. I think this is going to be a bit of another establishing night here for Aspinall and setting himself up to either face John Jones or to face the winner of Jones against Miocic. Again, Blaydes is a really, really good fighter. I just don't think he is on the level of Aspinall. But so, like, I don't think either guy we'll hear "and new" by the end of the night or anything like that. But I do also think both guides, I do also think both guys are deserving of these opportunities. Other fights announced here, Bobby Green taking on Patty Pimblett. That should be interesting and a real test for Patty. Manel Cape taking on Muhammad Mokaev. Arnold Allen against Giga Chikadze. That's a really, really fun fight. Daniel Pineda against Nathaniel Wood. Sean O'Bannon against Ravena Oliveira. Apologies for brutal pronunciation. And Bruna Brazil taking on Molly McCann. So again, problem, sorry for pronunciation issues on both, or on some of those, but some really intriguing fights there. There are a couple of intriguing fights on the Fight Night card this weekend, so let's look at them with another fight preview. The UFC is back at the Apex this weekend. A couple of fights of note. I just wanted to get these out there. Luana Pinheiro taking on Angela Hill in women's strawweight. Two ranked fighters going head-to-head. Pinheiro is 30 years old, born in Brazil, training at Nova União, 11-2 with two wins by knockout, five by submission, one knockout loss, and one decision loss on the resume. Her last fight was her first knockout loss as she falls to Amanda Ribas at the Ultimate Fight Night show in November of 2023. That ended a 9-fight winning streak, and as mentioned before, was the first time that she had been finished. She's 3-1 in the UFC. She's been with the promotion since 2021, an alumni of Dana White's Contender Series. She is a judo black belt, a Brazilian jiu-jitsu purple belt, a pro since 2016. Cool Bet has her as a +130 underdog. Angela Hill, 39 years old, born in Maryland, training at Alliance MMA, 16-13 for her MMA career, 5 wins by knockout, 11 by decision. She's been submitted twice and has lost by decision 11 times. Her most recent bout came just a few days before Pinheiro's last fight in November of 2023, where she won by unanimous decision over Denise Gomez. She's won 3 of her last 4 after a 3-fight losing streak. 11 straight fights have gone to the judges. The last time that it didn't was back in January of 2020. So a whole ass pandemic has happened between Angela Hill's either being stopped or stopping an opponent. She's been in the UFC a couple of times, consistently since 2017. She is 11-13 in the Ultimate Fighting Championship and a pro since 2014. She is currently listed at +110 at 888. Sport. This is a really interesting fight for me. Pinheiro gets a step up in competition and loses. So now, I'm not speaking ill of Angela Hill. I think the world of her as a fighter, but Amanda Ribas, she is not. And you have Hill kind of up on this rise right now. She's won 3 of 4 after a couple of really disappointing losses. And the one loss is to Mackenzie Dern. And so it does kind of feel like maybe we have a couple of ships passing here. The experience edge and all of it goes to Angela Hill. I just think her ability on the feet is going to get her the victory here, probably by decision, but I do think Angela Hill ends up getting a decision win here. And then in the main event, it is Edson Barboza taking on Lerone Murphy in the featherweight division. Barboza is now 36 years old, born in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, training at Ricardo Almeida BJJ and ATT, America Top Team. 24-11 for the career, one win by submission, another 11 by knockout. He has been knocked out 4 times and submitted twice. His last fight was a unanimous decision win over Sadiq Youssef back in October of 2023, giving him back-to-back wins. It was his first decision win since 2020. He's 4-2 in his last 6, 2 wins by knockout, 2 wins by decision. He's been in the UFC since 2013. He fought and made his UFC debut on UFC 123. Rampage versus Machida. That was the main event. The co-main event is BJ Penn against Matt Hughes. He fought before the Spike TV prelims. So if you were going to get Edson Barboza's UFC debut, you're either going to have to wait for UFC Unleashed or buy the DVD. That's how long this cat has been fighting. He's been in the UFC, like we said, for a very long time. 18-11 in the Ultimate Fighting Championship. His first UFC loss was to Jamie Varner, which just feels like another generation or two ago. He's been a pro since 2009. He's listed as plus plus 130 at CoolBet. Murphy, 32 years old, born in Manchester, England, training at Manchester top team, 13-0-1 with 7 knockout wins, coming off of a unanimous decision win back at the Ultimate Fight Night card in July of 2023. He's won 5 in a row since a draw in his UFC debut. 2 by stoppage, 3 by decision. This will be his first fight in North America. He's only fought in England and Abu Dhabi. He's been a pro since 2016, a BJJ blue belt, plus 110 at 888-SPORT. I like the underdog in this. I like Barbosa. Again, Murphy has not fought anyone as close to as good as Barbosa is. And I just feel like, even at 36 years old, Barbosa is still a high-level striker. Technically, incredibly sound, and he's still got some pop in those things. Coming off a decision win, but still, that was his first since 2020. So the man still has finishing power. He still has the ability to kind of keep you at bay. I think he dictates how this fight goes. I think it's an interesting fight. I think it's a close fight, but I think Barbosa ends up getting the win. All right, that is going to do it for a lengthy Fighting Friday. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We're not going to do a show for the UFC card this weekend, but we'll try to get some kind of Fury Usyk post-fight stuff up. It might have to wait till Monday, but we will try to get something up here as it goes along. But thank you guys so much. If you are listening, remember to subscribe. Make sure the episodes are downloading for you, and leave a review. If you are watching, make sure you subscribe. Leave a comment, like the video. You can follow me on social media, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. I'm at Primetime Klein, twitch.tv/PrimetimePK. You can email this show, couchpotatodiary@yahoo.com. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy the fights. I'm out.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.